देखी है, प्लॉट अच्छा है, अगर 4 लाख तक मिल जाए तो खरीद लेना चाहिए। हाँ, इंटरेस्टेड ऑफ कोर्स। वैसे उसका नीलाम कब हो रहा है?
2,75,000, 2,75,000, 2,75,000, 2,80,000, 2,80,000, 2,80,000, 2,80,000, 2,90,000, 3,00,000, 3,10,000, 3,10,000, 3,10,000,
4,10,000, 4,50,000 की हो, वो सिर्फ किसी को नीचा दिखाने के लिए मैं 6-7 लाख में खरीदा। नहीं, ये बिजनेस नहीं होगा। This is not business.
Hello and welcome to Economics, the Economist podcast. We are back with a special episode, which is an annual tradition. This is Tariq joining you along with Economist Jayant.
Hey guys, what's happening?
Jayant, what's been happening is, of course, it's that time of the year again where we talk about the Economics Nobel Prize. We have had previous episodes where we have profiled the winners and also talked about how their work and the kind of ideas that they have talked about or the kind of ideas that they have been awarded the Nobel Prize for impact our lives or impact the world in general. And we are back with the 2020 edition where, of course, the winners of the Nobel Prize, or to more specifically, give it the full name, the Sivers Riksbank Prize in Economic Sciences in the memory of Alfred Nobel, where two American professors, Paul Milgram and Robert Wilson, both teaching at Stanford, who were awarded that, as the Nobel Prize website says, for their contribution to improving auction theory overall. So we are here to talk about something very interesting, which even people who are not really as interested in or economic theory might still find familiar, because everybody is kind of familiar with auctions one way or the other. Whether
yes,
you are
pretty much.
You're a casual follower of the IPL, you've probably heard about the IPL auction. And there are lots of others which we'll talk about as we go along in this podcast. So, Jayant, let's begin with the backgrounder of these two guys. Paul Milgram is the third student of Robert Wilson's to have won the Nobel Prize. Alvin Roth was another who we've talked about in one of our earlier podcasts. And
2012.
He was back in 2012, and that was, he had won in market design. And incidentally, this particular award is also do with market design. We'll talk about how. And this is an interesting coincidence that it's the professor, that's Robert Wilson, and the student he was a thesis guide to during the PhD, that's Paul Milgram, who together have sort of won this award, which is a nice little coincidence. And there was a sweet little moment during the week when the Nobel Committee was trying to reach the two professors to give them the news very early in the morning in the US, because they live on the West Coast. I think it was like 3 a.m. in the morning or something. And Robert Wilson got the news because his phone was on, but Milgram was sleeping and his phone was off and they could not reach him. So there's a very cute little video circulating, which you have shared on our Instagram account as well, if you want to go and see, of him going and knocking on the door and telling him that, hey, Paul, you won the Nobel Prize.
Thanks to Google Nest for recording that.
So for once, Google Nest came in handy. Incidentally, Google Nest was recording this because there was a notification that had gone to Paul Milgram's wife, who was out of the country, and she recorded it for the rest of us to see what a sweet little nice little moment in a year that has not had too many of them. So at least one good thing there. But Jayant, let's begin with the basic kind of work or the basic framework. Like you were saying that these are professors who have won the Nobel Prize in economics in particular, where the theory and practice have sort of had a perfect match.
Happy with these guys winning because, well, their theory has actually worked in practical world. And we stock market or the finance guys would call this as a $120 billion idea, because that's how much the idea or the design, what they have designed for the auction mechanism has generated in terms of revenue to the government. So yes, it works in theory as well as in practical world. And that is why I'm a little bit more on a happier side that the practical guys are getting recognition in theory awards also.
Right. So, I mean, incidentally, the theory and the practice that they've been working on is they have worked a lot on auction theory and understanding how auctions work. And based on that work, they have essentially developed a framework for how to make them work better, how auctions can be better. And they have actually designed those rules and implemented those rules and models, which have actually led to better outcomes. So just to give everybody a little bit of a backgrounder on the economics of auctions in general. So we all know auctions, they have been around for ages, from livestock to art pieces to handicraft to pieces of land, mines, spectrum, fish. You name the commodity. Yeah, even the stock market is actually sort of an implicit auction, and we will talk about that also. You name the commodity, there are auctions for it. Tea, coffee, all of these kind of are sold through auctions from time to time. Diamonds are another. And not to forget, Jayant, IPL players as well.
Tell me more about it.
we definitely will as we go on. But so there are all these auctions. And just to give you the theoretical brief, there are different formats of auctions. So what we have normally seen, what we see in movies, you know, like the Sanjeev Kumar, Amitabh Bachchan starrer Trishul from 1978, which was a huge hit, where they're shown as business rivals and Amitabh Bachchan is trying to take revenge on Sanjeev Kumar, and he goes to one of these land auctions and bids more than Sanjeev Kumar was bidding for the particular piece of land to win it. Just because he wants revenge on him. So, you know, we have seen things like these. So when we see action scenes of this sort, where the price is being bid up continuously until there is one buyer left, it's typically what we've seen mostly in pop culture and everybody knows. So that kind of an auction is called an English auction. Jayant, you and I had gone to the International Flower Auction, Bangalore, about 7 years ago.
And yes, this is the only place in India in terms of where the rose auctioning happens. And we were in, I think, 1 or 2 weeks before Valentine's.
Just a week before Valentine's Day when you had gone there.
Yes,
we had front row seats to the auction where a lot of flowers buyers, I mean, basically people who would then take those flowers and sell it at their shops, had come there. So they follow a system called a Dutch auction system, which is the price starts from a particular number and it keeps ticking down until somebody sort of says yes to buy the particular flower or the particular type of flower being sold at that auction. It's a whole electronic thing. Nobody is screaming out the numbers there. It's not like an old style where there is somebody screaming out the bids and saying sold and things like that. The clock just ticks and the price keeps going down, and somebody just clicks their button if they want to buy it, and that's how this goes on. So that's another way of doing the auction. Of course, all auctions are not necessarily open, Jayant. There can be open bid auctions are where everybody is saying the bid out loud or it's public.
Yeah.
But you could also have sealed.
Do they have the sealed envelope bids wherein you will not know what the other, your rival or your competitor, what they're bidding because it's a closed envelope bid?
So if you've seen the IPL auction, part of the IPL auction is open bids, mostly open bids. But then sometimes if the maximum number is hit when you have the right to match card or like a envelope thing, sometimes they break the tie by asking the franchises to write the name or the price for that particular player on a piece of paper. And then whosoever is the higher sort of gets the player. So, and any tender or things like that also sort of work on the bid auction kind of a situation. Generally, auction for assets like mines and all that sometimes work on bids as well. Or if you could think about sports rights, Jayant, where we recently had Star Sports buying cricket rights in India for a humongous amount of money.
Yeah.
And of course, that also was sort of sealed bid because nobody knew in advance what they were bidding. It went on for a long time. And then finally, the numbers came out and it appeared that Star Sports had outbid everybody by quite a huge number. So that was also another type of auction. Would you want to mention something, Jayant, about the type of auctions in stock markets? I mean, stock markets are basically auction places.
Yes, I mean... So if, I mean, now it is all electronic. If someone wants to get a ringside view of how people shout, and they can probably check out the latest Hansel Mehta's The Scam on Harshad Mehta, how the physical auctioning used to happen. Now it's everything that's electronic and obviously the highest bidder. It's more of an English, not the Dutch. So yeah, that's with the finance kind of thing in terms of stock market and auctioning.
And of course, the stock market fundamentally is a place of auctioning because there are people are going and essentially bidding on the stock. In fact, sometimes it is called the bid price. And if you are applying for the IPO of a company and if you want to buy shares, generally you have to send in a bid. So there are auctions all around us for the smallest to the largest things that we do. And of course, generally speaking, for a long time, economic theory had held that if all the participants in an auction are rational and risk neutral, which basically they evaluate risk in a neutral fashion. It's not like they irrationally like more risk or they are very irrationally risk averse. In that case, any format of the auction generally maximizes the value for everybody, which is the buyer and the seller. The buyer gets the true value. The seller also sort of gets the best value out of the asset that they're selling. But as a lot of people discovered over the years and Milgram and Wilson have been trying to solve, these markets have limitations or complexities which do not allow just any format of auction to work. So Jayant, if you want to talk about this idea of market design and why the market needs to be sort of nudged because not everybody is necessary.
So there is this common belief or a myth that market solves everything in terms of any problem. Give it to the market, market will decide, the market gives you the solution. But the whole, if you dig deeper into the things, if the market is not designed properly, then the market fails to give any solution for that matter. So it's the design, how do you design the whole market is what defines or gives you the solution in terms of the thing. And that is what these two gentlemen have solved the problem in terms of designing the entire market design and coming out with the practical solution to it. Because markets in their own merit does not solve any problem if there is no proper design to it.
So, and when we talk about market design, what exactly are they designing in the case of this market? If you would want to take us through when you say auction market design, what are the elements that they're designing?
So the entire design is based on how do you solve the problem of, so example, these people have worked on something like solving telecom spectrum auctioning, and they were going through the whole thing of how the system has evolved over the years and what was the problem in terms of the thing. So in the faces, they have seen how the things which both the buyer as well as the seller and the government in here, the other party thing, how do you keep everyone happy, and in terms of what is the solution in terms of thing. If you go entirely on the pro market kind of thing, that will not solve the thing, because at the end of the day, government will end up earning too much revenue, which will be private guys will be left with less of money. But so they wanted to give perceived value of everyone at the end of the day being in terms of the utility on the higher side for everyone.
So let's what they have. Let's talk about the spectrum auction and the asset being auctioned. So the basic challenge is that if you want to sell an asset like that, essentially the government owns all the spectrum, and they would want to sell some of it, let's say, to the telecom companies. So the challenge that would be there is that these telecom companies then would have their own sort of private value for the spectrum, how much would they be willing to pay. And also there would be sort of like a common knowledge of everybody knowing how much generally the spectrum is worth, or how much value would somebody generally have for the spectrum. That is among all the telecom companies who might be bidding for it, because it's their most important asset. So when they are actually doing the bid, they are getting out that information of about their private value. So you are closer to discovering the actual price of this asset. So that's why auctions are sometimes called price discovery mechanisms. So if you could tell us, Jayant, what was the original format in the American market, and what did these professors do to change it?
So first, the initial days, the how the spectrum were given out was like a more of a beauty context, wherein each one companies had to come out lobbying, telling that this is how much in terms of customers we have, and this is why we need so much spectrum and all, and that is how they were allocated. And in this model, the revenue generated process was very limited. Government ended up getting very less money for the thing, and entirely most of the money was made out of the public, I mean private guys who were the companies who were making the thing. Then later they moved into the next plot in that this was not that much of a revenue maximizing for the government to optimum levels. So let's move to the next order of thing. Was basically they were allocating frequency of the spectrum based on a lottery system. So if I and you would put in our names for different areas, and based on the lottery system, we were allotted, and based on which. And they discovered in this lottery system that the primary market where the actual money which is ending up in the government treasury was less, and a lot of action was happening in the secondary market. It's like a classic IPO wherein the owner is selling at a very low price, and the secondary market discovers that the value has too much, and the private guys are trading among themselves the spectrum at much higher value. And this and the other problem which the US guys saw is because the things were subdivided into states and municipalities, I mean cities and all, a lot of on local levels, some of the smaller guys were bidding the thing and jacking up the prices and then selling heavily to the national carriers. So that is why the lottery system also was not optimum at some level in terms of the spectrum frequency and all. And again, government was the end loser in terms of getting less revenue out of this. So this is where our guys, our gentlemen came in and developed the system known as SMRA, which is simultaneously multiple round auctioning, wherein at multiple rounds, multiple areas goes into bidding in terms to the different auction guys. And so there is no information arbitrage in terms of knowing, and everything is bid at simultaneously, and no one can lap up everything at one single go. You have to think about the opportunity cost, and that's how the system has evolved over the period of time. And because of these systems which has developed and being fine-tuned, and between 94 to 2014, the system more or less has generated around $120 billion, which is 120 billion with a B dollars, the government. And Federal Communication Commission, which is in charge of its equivalents to our TRIA in US, and they were very pretty happy with the whole system, how it is going. So that's so, how the system has evolved over the period of time.
So to solve this problem with this sort of simultaneous round auctioning to increase both the value for the government in terms of the money that they were collecting from auctioning off these important assets, and of course in terms of generating good value or price for the people who are buying it, because that was more realistic than those who were cornering the market by getting those bids at different places where they could sort of almost extort money out of them. So
yes,
this obviously is a very elegant solution, but Jayant, as we all know that in India we have not had telecom spectrum is something that's a bit of a taboo topic in India, because we have had some big disasters with it. So if you were to contrast the American system to the Indian system from the lens of this year's prize and the idea of economics of auctions, what did TRAI and the government of India get wrong here?
So get wrong is I discovered the whole thing about the history of telecom auctioning is somewhere in 2012-13, when a lot of this halagula was happening about spectrum sale which has gone wrong and the perceived loss by CAG and all this thing. And there's this one particular gentleman by the name Shankar Sharma. In one interview, he explained the whole thing about how telecom auctioning might fill in the coffers of the government or the treasury with huge amount, but the growth of industry is in danger. And like he said it in way back thing, and I went back and read, and it's similar scene wherein in 90s we were also giving it out like a beauty context, and until 2010 or 12 wherein we decided because of a court ruling that we have to auction, and we auctioned at various level from 2G to 3G to some part of 4G also. And with the going in terms of the, where we lost the whole picture is basically the revenue maximizing for the government. And we lost the picture wherein we were not leaving too much chips on the table to the private guys, because the end of the day, these guys are end up doling out so much money for spectrum itself. There's not much of money which is left for the private guys to put in on the infrastructure. We all know how the 2G works or the 3G works, or the 4G in our mobile, because there's not much of signal here, and we use Vodafone, which is perceived to be Bangalore was more Vodafone friendly, but not nowadays. And it was too much of infrastructure logjam is there, because there's not much of a money. And from 24 or 26 players, we have gone down to oligopoly, or we're staring at almost a monopoly, and where each company is almost owning 30-35% of share. That is a little scarier situation. And again, it goes back to the notion that should government be maximizing their end thing, because here government has to only facilitate and take a cut and thing, not just taking out too much money out of thing. And with all this challenges, the problem, and we have gone into companies with 2-3 companies owning almost $20-30 billion of debt, and it was a sunrise industry creating lakhs of jobs in the last, from 2018 it has not created a single job. In fact, there's 90,000 job cuts which has happened in this sunrise industry. And imagine connecting 1.3 billion out of which we have 900 million cellular connection, and if two companies controlling more than 60%, and the third guy is more or less on a verge of withdrawal or defaulting on their bonds, that's not a good situation to be in a sunrise industry.
Although, of course, we could make the case, Jayant, that the American telecom industry is not faring too much better, because it's a bit of an oligopolistic situation there as well.
Yes, yes.
Service
yes.
levels are not necessarily excellent. Yeah. But well, let's go back to the original sin, which is that poor market design may have accelerated this, because the way the auctions were designed, like you said, they were designed to maximize revenue for the government, and that might have been a bad idea, because you are looking at balancing the the interests of the sellers, the buyers, and the taxpayers and society at large as well. So, which is where Milgram and Wilson's work comes in, which says that it's not easy to do, but it's possible to design ways to get around these things. So basically possible to design better auctions.
And they've shown that.
And they've shown that with the auctions that they have designed, and they've been working on others, including understanding the role of the internet in terms of the auctions, whether it's not just eBay, but currently all ad space on Facebook and Google are sold through these auctioning systems on ad spaces, which you don't get to see, but it's happening at the back end, where given the value of an audience or the value of a slot, there are different kind of automated systems which are buying those auction slots at an auction by bidding up or down the price. The price keeps fluctuating, so the price is very dynamic. While auctions are, of course, present in all sorts of other places, let's kind of wrap up the podcast with something that everybody has a say in and everybody has an interest in and everybody wants to talk about those auctions, which is the IPL auctions, because everybody has an opinion on whether a player is overvalued or undervalued. I mean, somebody bought a Rahul Tavatia at 30 lakhs and he's already won two almost unwinnable matches for Rajasthan Royals. So is he undervalued? You know, you pay crores of rupees for a Ben Stokes. Is he overvalued? So those kind of discussions come around all the time.
But, hey, go easy on Ben Stokes.
But if we want to, so we'll not talk about specific players, Jen, because that will open up a new can of worms. Let's talk about the design overall. That is the IPL auction, which is basically an English auction. Is it good design?
No, I don't think so. It's a good design in terms of the whole. So there's too many checks in terms of this. Kehne ke liye English hai, but in full design, it is not English. There's too many caps and all kinds of shenanigans are there in terms of, it's not too open. So that is where my beef is with the system in terms of like the uncapped guys and once that matching system and all those things. I don't know who came out with those all idea, innovative, tweaking the things, but and there's too much recency bias in the bidding. And go back to last 6 to 8 auctions, check out the highest bidders. And oh, by the way, we didn't touch upon winner's curse and all this. Since we're talking about IPL auctioning of players, you could also touch upon on winner's curse.
So in fact, the IPL is the perfect place to talk about the winner's curse, because we have kind of talked about this in our blog posts and other things beforehand as well, that essentially winner's curse is somebody ending up paying more than what they would have wanted to pay for a particular asset or a player or whatever it is at an auction, mainly because the price is bid sort of unnaturally high by competitive bidding. Which is also a problem that Milgram and Wilson have been trying to solve, because one of the inefficiencies of most of these auction formats is that either A, they produce these winner's curses, which is companies tend to overbid. You know, your telecom story in India is also, some of it is definitely to do with the winner's curse, where they probably bid a little too much or a little too optimistically. Or the second thing is then, once there is a winner's curse, once somebody suffers from that regret or that curse, the next time when bidders are bidding, they might actually bid way lower than the actual value because they are already concerned that they might bid the price up too much. So that creates sort of an imbalance, which is what the winner's curse was. So if you would want to put it in context of the IPL.
Yeah. So tell me this, winner's curse is more... in which style of auctioning, English or Dutch?
Well, I guess as far as the winner's curse goes, the Dutch auction seems to be more susceptible, because in the English auction, the price is going up. As long as the price is going up, there is new information coming in, because everybody is realizing that, okay, somebody else has bid a little higher for it. Maybe they have some information or they have some more private value for this than I do. And then they can evaluate if their value matches that. If not, they can drop out. and of course, whoever remains can win it. But in the Dutch auction, it already starts from a price and then the price is dropping and you have to bid at a particular point. So it's likely because the dropping price is not really revealing any new information. So it could end up sort of having more winner's curses there, because in the scramble to quickly lock in the price, somebody might end up wanting to buy it at a very high price. If listeners are wondering that why in Dutch auctions prices do not drop down to zero, remember that these auctions are where there are competitive bidders who want that stuff. So when you're talking about flowers, like you and I saw at the flower auction, there are a lot of sellers who want that particular kind of roses or that particular color of flower. So whoever wants it, want it as soon as possible, because they don't know whether the others will take it away in the meantime. So that's why in Dutch auctions, prices don't drop to zero, if anybody's wondering how do Dutch auctions work. But yeah, Dutch auctions are more susceptible to the winner's curse than English auctions are. But it can happen in the English auction as well, because sometimes players might not behave rationally. So let's go back to the IPL, Jayant.
Yes.
So in the IPL, I mean, we have seen a lot of these cases where people have been bought for very expensive amounts. I mean, there was a famous case of Mumbai, I think, Mumbai Indians buying Glenn Maxwell for $1 million plus on one of the seasons. But he was hardly utilized by Mumbai at all. So
yes,
what can the IPL do to kind of improve this this system or the auction? If for example, we had given Professors Milgram and Wilson the job to come up with a better idea for IPL, what do you think they might be saying?
How does this drafting of players versus the auctioning of players will work? Does that solve a problem of winner's curse and everything? Like how the NBA draft the players rather than auctioning off like an English style, will that solve our problem here?
It could, but then again, it's a question of the kind of markets we are talking about, and there would have to be some kind of value assigned to the player, which is the key part here. Because in the NBA, typically the draft is only for incoming players who are just entering the NBA for the first time. The rest of it happens in terms of trade and free agency from team to team who are already existing players. So the draft works probably for an incoming set of players well, but for the rest of the players, you would need an auction. But then again, you could eliminate the auction itself and simply open a trading market where that could happen.
Yes, having a secondary market would suffice here, like a football style wherein the whole IPL should get out of the whole purpose of there's not the business to auction the thing. Let's the team buy between themselves and do the needful. So in that way, market design should work in such a way wherein the teams themselves will value the thing and they will not be hyper competitive on one single player and let the player along with his agent make a very value thing. Not necessarily a player with the getting highest paid, he has to choose the thing based on his prospect, his playable time and how many matches he looks forward, opportunity cost, he can make a value decision. I think drafting for the uncapped guys and developing a secondary market, trading between teams for the players should solve this winner's curse. Wherein a lot of this thing wherein the big bash is over, the auctions are there and suddenly unnamed players, foreign players are bought at such humongous prices because of the recency bias will get lesser.
So that's an example of where auctions can turn out to be inefficient, mainly because the BCCI kind of makes a whole show of it and maybe the entertainment and the excitement part of it takes over. And not enough is done in terms of the actual efficiency. So again, it's poor design in that it does not balance all the interests. So a draft plus trading might automatically let the market do the work, which kind of closes the circle for us in the sense that, Jayant, you started by saying that auctions or designed auctions work as market design for places where simply the market so-called doesn't work. But you can then also have situations where you you do not want to excessively design the market or incorrectly design it. So you might sometimes want to remove those constraints and just let the market operate normally the way it does and let it do its job.
Yes. And since we were talking about removing the whole auction thing, I hope that Richard Madley is not listening to us. Otherwise, he'll be running behind us with the hammer in his hand.
I'm sure Mr. Madley can get a lot of other places where he can work as an auctioneer. He doesn't necessarily need to be auctioning cricketers. But yeah, Richard Madley, of course, is the man who was at the helm of the IPL auction for a long time. Became a very well-known face. In fact, his own Twitter handle is, I think, called the IPL auctioneer. We are moving on to a world where all this information can be processed faster. And of course, it's potentially possible to design better auctions or better bid systems or better possibilities that way as compared to what we have experienced or what has been made just for the sake of entertainment. Like we were talking about the IPL auction, which originally was maybe a nice idea to drum up excitement, but kind of has gone past its sell-by date in economics terms for sure.
Yes.
And that brings us to the end of this special Nobel Prize episode, Jayant. We have covered a little bit about ideas behind auction theory. And of course, if you guys have any questions about them or if you have any interesting observations that you would like to share with us, please feel free to come back to us or visit our Instagram. That's instagram.com/economist or visit our Twitter handle. That's @TheEconomist on Twitter and send us your queries, questions, and also subscribe to our podcast. Search for The Economist Podcast or just search for Economist on any of the podcasting platforms and you should be able to find us. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Audio Boom, as well as Spotify. You can find us on all of these places. And anything else to plug before we log off this latest episode of Economics, the special on the Nobel
Yes,
Prize?
We have one more stream of podcasts known as Book of Sins. So we have covered the scam, Harshit Mehta. So since everyone is watching the TV series and brilliantly made, probably give us a chance also listen to our podcast which Tariq has recorded himself. He has done a brilliant job in that. Please do listen and spread the word.
Thanks for the plug, Jayant. Hopefully you'll find it interesting because it talks about the economics of the scam more than sort of the other mechanics. Of course, for the drama you can always watch the series that is currently airing on yes. Sony Live. By the way, full disclosure, neither me nor Jayant have been paid by Sony Live to make that promotion, but just that we really liked the way it has been done. So,
yeah, and they have brought the life to the something with the dull topic and brilliantly made. So kudos to the team there and give it a try.
All right, so that brings us to the end of this episode and we will see you guys in next Economics episode. Join us then. Bye.